Let me welcome everyone here. It is always good to see people at the beginning of a new academic year. I hope that you had a good and a productive summer. And I particularly want to welcome all of the new senators who are here, if not for the first time, at least for the first time in a little while. I want to thank Amy Wendt for stepping into the role of UC chair, and to Barbara Bowers and Rick Amasino, who are the new members of UC, succeeding Dorothy Farrar Edwards and Beth Myrand, the outgoing chair. Beth led the UC last year during a somewhat extraordinary year with what we believe was a record 9 faculty senate meetings. So if you're lucky, you'll only get 8 this year. And I also particularly want to thank the secretary of the faculty, Steve Smith, who's done a terrific job working on some really hard and big issues over the past year. And thanks to all of you for your willingness to be here and to serve on the Senate. I want to note 2 additions to our leadership team. I don't know if they're here yet. Laurent Heller, is Laurent here? There you are, has joined us from UC Berkeley over the summer. He is our new Vice Chancellor for Finance and Administration and succeeds Michael Lehman, who is the interim who stepped in after Daryl Bazell's departure last March. And I also want to welcome, and I'm pretty sure she's not here, the new dean of our nursing school, Linda Scott, who joined us from the College of Nursing at the University of Illinois in Chicago in July. And she succeeds Catherine May, who stepped down after 15 years of service as dean. And then lastly, I want to recognize Francois Artolio Manier, dean of the business school for the last 5 years. He's leaving at the end of this academic year to become the dean of the London Business School, and we will be in the midst of a dean search over this coming year. So that's the news on senior changes and faces. Let me start with a reminder of some of the things that we have accomplished over more recent months here at the University of Wisconsin. We, this last year, kicked off the largest fundraising campaign in the history of the university. Now, you kick those things off when you're well into the campaign, but I'm nonetheless delighted to say that this summer we hit the halfway point to our $3.2 billion goal, which is excellent news. We launched 2 rounds this past year of UW 2020, which is, I think, one of the more exciting research competitions I know about. We gave out about $10 million to 28 awards for real seed projects that we hope will grow into major research efforts and bring in all sorts of outside research dollars and expand the research footprint of the campus. In a year when we had a larger than usual number of outside offers, we retained the great majority of faculty. We retained people at about our usual retention rate with outside offers, and that's incredibly important to maintaining the quality and the momentum of this place. We have welcomed 63 new members of the faculty, many of whom the people in this room worked very hard to recruit, so thank you for that. And we have just welcomed a freshman class that is the largest and one of the most diverse in history. We have 150 more students of color in this class than we did last year. We have 90 more targeted minorities in this class than we did last year in our freshman class. So it's a strong and a good class. And as you know, our retention, our graduation rates have been steadily rising at our all-time, at least long-time highs. We are among the top public universities in those statistics. And finally, over the summer, we were again named one of the world's top 25 universities in a ranking that looks at research as well as education, while earlier this month, we were among the 10 best public universities in the nation in the U.S. News and World Report. None of that would have happened without the work that you all do, and I thank you for everything you do day to day, both in the classroom and in all of your research. So while there's good news to share, and I could keep going with good news for a long time, there is no question that there are also a number of challenges in front of us. Our budget has been cut in 5 of the last 6 legislative sessions under both political parties, and that has kept us from hiring new faculty as aggressively as other schools. It's led to the loss of some really valuable top teachers and researchers. Nothing saps the morale of a department more than losing valued colleagues. Every one of you knows that. But I believe we can find ways to create a stronger and a more resilient university that will grow and thrive into the next 168 years by working on a whole number of fronts, and I want to talk about 2 of them. First, building a more stable financial base, and I'm going to talk about budgets. You've heard parts of this talk before, but it bears repeating. And secondly, making sure that this campus is a place where outstanding people want to be. So let me start with building a more stable financial base. This year is a budget year. As you know, we have a biennial budget in the state of Wisconsin. We're spending a lot of time preparing for that. Once the election is over, we are going to launch into a vigorous debate in the state about what the budget for the next 2 years should look like. You all know that the last state budget left the UW system with a $250 million deficit and left us here in Madison with an $86 million deficit. As a result of that, we were forced over this past year and this year to cut $50 million out of our budget. That was not easy, as many of you who've been involved in those budget cuts know. The bad news is we had to cut $50 million. The good news is we only had to cut $50 million because to fill that $86 million deficit, we've been able to expand other revenues over these 2 years that have basically filled in the remainder of the gap. Now, those cuts continue to be felt across the university, and a number of us spoke in detail about them and about their effects at the September 14th budget forum, which I know a number of you attended. For those of you who couldn't be there, if you have an extra hour free and want to watch the fascinating video, it's available at budget.wisc.edu. We have one main message that we are going out with everywhere in the state this year. It is time to reinvest in the University of Wisconsin. I've spoken very directly about the impacts of the cuts we've taken, and I plan to do that as we continue to advocate for new state dollars. The Regents at their August meeting put in part of their request for the new state budget. That includes almost $100 million in more state funding than we had in the last budget. 50 million of those are the restoration of dollars that got lapsed in the budget. They put the money in our budget and then didn't give it to us. And the governor has already indicated he will restore that 50 million in his requested budget. And then another 42.5 in new funds that the Board of Regents has requested for the system as a whole. The Regents are also asking for a standard capital budget, which funds construction, renovation, and maintenance. Now, a standard capital budget sounds like business as usual, but that's not what we got last time around. Last time around, there essentially was virtually no capital budget. The request the Regents have put in includes authority for projects at Slichter Hall and the Walnut Street greenhouses and much-needed improvements to our utility infrastructure. It also, and this is incredibly important, seeks simply basic money for maintenance and repairs. This last budget was the first budget in anyone's memory that the state put zero money into basic facilities maintenance or repairs anywhere among state agencies, including us. That means when a steam pipe breaks, we take the money from the educational side in order to fix it. And in this next budget, I very much hope that the state will accept its basic responsibilities for funding maintenance and repairs, much less going beyond that for a further capital budget. Finally, the Regents are also requesting some important flexibilities, the most important of which is the ability for the system to issue its own bonds for building projects that come with a steady revenue stream. So for instance, when we build dorms, dorms come with a revenue stream. People pay money to stay in them. That means that any private sector funder bank in the country would fund a dorm for you because they know you're going to be able to make the payments with the revenue that comes out of it. And we would like to do what virtually every university in this country does, have the ability to issue our own bonds and self-fund and self-manage those projects. So that's an important conversation that we're in the midst of. The outcome of a state budget debate won't wrap up until probably the middle of June. The governor will present a budget in probably sometime in January. It will then go to the legislature for a very lively debate. The Joint Finance Committee will make a recommendation to both houses of the Senate and the legislature, and they will both act on it, and it will be done sometime. So we're a long ways down the road from having a final budget. But we are at the beginning stages of this whole process, and we're working hard on two fronts, a budget communication strategy, as well as a financial strategy that's going to allow us to achieve greater independence from the uncertainty of state funding. So let me tell you a little bit about both of these efforts, and I have to emphasize the importance of both of them. We can't simply say, look, state money is going away, let's ignore it. State money is too important. It is the core money available for education, and it is the money that we in turn use to leverage so much else. So we hire faculty on state money, and it's the faculty in turn bring in research dollars. So and build the reputation that brings in top students, that in turn, over time, builds alumni and attracts donors. So we absolutely have to fight for a fair share of state dollars for higher education. But at the same time, we have to be realistic about building other revenue streams as well. So let me talk first about our budget communication strategy. For too long, I think we have been more silent than we should, allowing those who don't understand the importance of higher education in the state to control the narrative, and we need to change that. This can't just be a conversation between the two ends of State Street, although that conversation is very important. It has to involve the citizens of the state. And last month, we launched a three-part campaign in partnership with the Wisconsin Foundation and Alumni Association to reach out to media, the public, and state policymakers with one key message. You've already heard it. It's time to reinvest in the University of Wisconsin. The first part of this is Project 72, which I hope a number of you have read about in the paper. This is built around 72 news stories, one for each of the 72 counties in Wisconsin, that spotlight a few of our top alumni research and outreach programs that are making a difference in that county. All 72 stories are being pitched in the month of September to local, state, and national media. They're being highlighted in paid media placements, including billboards. You might have seen some of these if you travel around the state. We've had an excellent response to Project 72 so far, and we hope it sparks conversations around the state about the importance of reinvesting in the university. The second part of the communication strategy is the Reinvest in UW campaign. And this is the first time we've really done a multi-channel media campaign in the state. And I will note we are using private dollars here. There's no state tax dollars or tuition dollars involved. I hope that you may have seen or heard at least some of the spots. They began this month. They're going to run through May. We're on cable TV, primarily in the Milwaukee market, statewide radio and WPR, and online with various digital ads that pop up at all sorts of inconvenient times. We are expecting to receive 46 million impressions from this. In other words, 46 million eyeballs over the nine-month campaign. And this is an experiment. It's something I think we absolutely need to be doing, given where we are in the state, given the challenges we face, given the need to communicate across the state. And we will be evaluating what the effects of this campaign is and what sort of results it produces. The third part of the campaign is outreach to the public and to policymakers. And one of the things there I want to highlight, which some of you have already volunteered for, is what we're calling the Faculty Hometown Engagement Project. We're inviting faculty who grew up in Wisconsin or who have research projects or outreach work in a Wisconsin community outside Dane County to consider going there to give a talk. We'll find a place for you to go. We'll match you with opportunities. We announced the program in late August, and we already have more than 30 faculty registered from across campus. So if you're interested and you haven't signed up, go Google Faculty Hometown Engagement Project at the University of Wisconsin. We would love to have more volunteers. Outreach to policymakers is another focus. And as they say at the Capitol, if you're not at the table, you're likely to find yourself on the menu. So we're going to be spending a lot of time at the Capitol, along with profs and ASPRO and ASM and all the other groups that are doing lobbying on behalf of higher education. I'm going to be traveling around the state quite a bit this fall. I have 5 joint appearances, each of them in a place where there is a 4-year campus. And I and the chancellor on that campus will be meeting with business leaders, with local press, with legislators, talking about how the budget cuts have affected our campuses together, this part of the state, these communities, and how and why we need to be reinvesting in the higher education campuses of the state. All of those are efforts focused on, I'll say it one more time, the one message: it's time to reinvest in the University of Wisconsin. That's our strategy moving forward, at least over the fall, as we get, we'll have a much more fine-tuned shoe leather at the Capitol strategy once we're past the election. But let me talk about the second issue that we're spending a lot of time to work on, which is the financial strategy of developing multiple revenue streams. I'm not going to talk at length about this. I've talked about this in other meetings. I'd be happy to engage in a more extended conversation with you, with members of your department, at any time you wanted to. The key issue is this: state dollars provide only 15% of our budget. That percentage has declined steadily over the last 20 years. And it's not likely to return to anywhere near where it was only 15 to 20 years ago. We have to be entrepreneurial in developing alternative revenue streams. And I want to be clear while I'm working on this, because I, at some meeting last spring, I think it was, I was talking about what we were doing for summer, and a faculty member in the Senate basically said back to me, well, look, you're just trying to make money. And let me be clear that making money is not my primary goal. My primary goal is paying faculty and staff salaries that are competitive in a global market for education. My goal is to offer some of the best educational programs at any public university and to support research and make sure we have the facilities and the ability to compete as a top-ranked research institution. Those are the goals. Unfortunately, to achieve them, they include, at least among other things, money. And we have to have financial resources. We not only need stable revenue that is flat over time, we need growing revenue for investment in new ideas, new centers, new projects, new faculty that we want to hire. So we're working on a variety of different fronts. And you know, our main revenue streams beyond the state are research, tuition, gift dollars, and I'm putting auxiliaries out of this because auxiliaries like dorms are money in, money out. And fourthly, and this is a revenue stream, expense control. Every dollar that we save that we don't put into expenses, we can, that are administrative expenses, we can put into program for education and research. So we're working on all four of those. I don't need to talk about research funding. It's a third of our budget. We get more money from the federal government than from the state. We are more a federally funded agency than a state funded agency. And making sure we maintain our strength there is deeply important. That's a whole topic and a conversation for another day. Secondly, tuition revenue. And here there's multiple strategies. We have to care about in-state tuition. As you know, we've been in a freeze for 4 years. The governor has talked about freezing for at least one more year. We're hoping he'll have some flexibility on the second year of this next biennium. But we need to have an ongoing conversation about what type of subsidies should the state put into in-state students. Everyone agrees we need to subsidize in-state tuition. But the amount of that subsidy, you know, is one that can be validly debated. And I'm particularly, as you all know, not a fan of a tuition freeze. Our costs are frozen at a minimum. Tuition ought to be increasing at least with costs, because otherwise you're basically doing budget cuts by another name. But tuition goes well beyond in-state tuition. As you all know, 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, we got the regents to approve out-of-state and professional school tuition increases. Our professional school tuition particularly is very low. I went and asked for 4 years of increases. They gave me two and said, come back again when 2 years are up. 2 years are up in this current year, and I will be back again talking about what we need to make our professional schools competitive with market-based tuition. Tuition also involves the enrollment mix. Again, you've heard this before. We are guaranteeing admission to a minimum, admission, enrollment of a minimum of 3,600 students from Wisconsin. In our current class, I think we have 3,660. That is more students than we have enrolled on average over the last 10 years. It's an incredibly strong commitment to the state of Wisconsin. And in exchange for that commitment, the regents have lifted their hard cap on the in-state, out-of-state percentages. And that gives us the ability to have on the margins a little bit of flexibility. If we admit more transfers from out-of-state, for instance, we can, you know, we can raise additional revenues without threatening that cap. And then the last part of tuition strategy is expanded educational programs, new ways to bring tuition revenues in. The most important piece of this strategy in my mind is making the summer term succeed as a major successful part of our educational enterprise. And I wrote a blog on this in the last couple of weeks, and you can all go read it if you want to think more about summer term. But we've been very successful this summer. We offered 71 new courses. Lots of students got some of their distribution requirements out of the way. Students went and focused on things that take a lot of energy. Like I talked to a student who went and did their foreign language this summer and said, this is just great because I could just, you know, simply eat, live, and breathe the language. I talked to another student who was doing organic chem for exactly, you know, similar reasons. We ended up with a 10% increase in enrollment and a 21% increase in summer tuition revenues. 80% of that goes back to the schools and colleges to be reinvested in their educational programs. And my goal is to keep moving the attendance and the revenues from the summer up steadily over the next 5 years. I want to thank this group for approving a new 4-week summer session when you approved the calendar recently. And I know today's agenda approves another calendar issue that will continue to make the summer very much more viable. In addition to tuition, you know, the third revenue source here is gift revenue. We're working hard on this. As I noted, we're at the halfway point of our campaign. We brought in substantial new funding for faculty chairs, something we were way under-resourced on, and every school and college has benefited from that. We are in the midst of bringing in substantial amounts of new funding for scholarships at both the undergraduate and the graduate level, and you will, over time, be feeling the benefits of that. You know, this is one that all of you, and particularly your department chairs and your deans, are involved with, and it's an important aspect of what we need to be doing to be a modern university. Then lastly, we have to control expenses. You can't just work on the revenue side. And we've done a number of things on this front. If you look at what's happened to our energy costs, if you look at some of the things we've done around IT, I think we've been working steadily on this, but I want to flag something you're going to be hearing more about. One area of focus that we're going to start in on this year is to review our IT spending, which is currently highly decentralized. And I must say, highly at risk of security breaches, which I hope you have all read about every day. We are not immune to the problems that every major big organization in this country is facing. Michael Lehman, who served as the interim vice chancellor for finance and administration after Daryl Bozell left, is now working as a special assistant to the chancellor, heading up an IT governance initiative. Mike served as CFO and chief information officer of Sun Microsystems for many years. He understands big and complex organizations. He understands IT. And we expect that this initiative, which is working closely with the governance groups, is going to result in a more participative and inclusive process and help us actually oversee and align cross-campus IT spending in ways that will make us a more effective organization. We aren't doing anything fast, but you're going to be hearing more about that, I suspect, and I want you to know I think this is an important priority. It's probably going to take us a couple of years to fully work through. But the finance side is only part of what we have to focus on. We also have to have the people here that make this place a first-rate, top-notch global institution. So let me talk briefly about how we make sure UW is a place where outstanding people want to be and live and work. Compensation is number one on my list, and I suspect it's number one on your list as well. You know how poorly we look relative to some of our peers in compensation. We've not had across-the-board increases in pay in four budgets, that's 8 years, with the exception of one budget where we got 2 1% increases. The regents, I will note, will be requesting some compensation increases in December. That's the timing of that. So you'll be hearing more about across-the-board increases, I hope. And I do hope this is one we'll be doing some strong lobbying on. But I will tell you, it is never popular to go to state legislators and say, you've got to make pay increases for public employees. And you know, that's a tough sell, but it's long past time in this state to do some of that. So we need to work on compensation at our end. I can't do across-the-board compensation increases, but I can do targeted compensation increases. And several things here. First of all, we're allowing departments more flexibility in calculating the base adjustments for promoted faculty from assistant to associate or to associate to full. We previously simply had a fixed dollar amount that could be assigned, and in some places that really meant junior faculty, when they moved to associate, fell behind. We're now allowing either a floor up to a 10% of salary adjustment at the discretion of the department. Secondly, we're setting up a number of block grants with more money available for compensation adjustments this year than we've been able to put into compensation for a good number of years. We're going to provide $3.5 million in performance-based funding for raises for faculty that is for merit, equity, market adjustments, and retention issues. And I've told the deans and directors that I hope they use some of those funds to seek out the faculty who didn't get outside offers last year and who we really want to make sure we keep and reward and let them know we want them here and they don't have to look for an outside offer to stay. We're also going to be providing $3.5 million in staff raises. And then in addition, we're doing an experiment here. We're putting $2 million into one-time bonuses, going to colleges to be allocated to the departments that are basically one-time rewards to faculty or staff who performed above expectation, perhaps taking on extra work, covering for a colleague, doing extraordinary administrative service, working closely with mentoring students on some project. We want to see how that bonus program works because we're really able to do that this year a little bit better than we can do a more base funding. So I'm hoping that will help us. Finally, in addition to compensation, We obviously are still in a conversation about some aspects of tenure. We went through a hard debate last year on our basic tenure statutes. I challenge any university to see their tenure statutes torn up and told to rewrite them. That wouldn't have gone through a similar and very painful discussion. But we are now at a point where we do have tenure statutes that are different from where we were before, but as I've said before, are largely comparable to our peers. The next step, and one we will start today, and that I hope will be far less controversial, is to revise our procedures for post-tenure review. You're going to hear more about that and have a chance to talk about that in a few minutes, and I want to thank all the people who've worked on that revised document that's coming to you today for a first reading. I will close by saying a few words about diversity and campus climate. We had a number of extremely unfortunate incidences of bias on our campus last spring that were a powerful reminder that this is not yet a welcoming and inclusive community for all people. As I've told campus leadership in my various meetings this fall, I'm a little worried about campus. There are a lot of people watching what's happening out there in the world who are here on campus and feeling vulnerable and scared and angry. And we have to be responsive to that. We have to make our community a welcoming and inclusive community, not just because these are part of our community and we want them to be, you know, to feel welcome here, but because this is a fundamental educational mandate of the 21st century. Every one of our students, our staff, and our faculty needs to know how to live in an inclusive and diverse community. If you don't, you're not ready for a 21st century career. And that, you know, that's what a lot of what we're doing is about. And we can come back and talk about those initiatives. Again, I'm happy to go out to any department to discuss them. You should all have picked up our two-pager on some of the new initiatives that we are focused on this fall, including, I might note, a request to every unit on campus to run some form of inclusiveness or diversity discussion and training in their unit for faculty and staff. And I hope all of you have seen your units start work on that. The provost has put together 3-4 pages of resources around campus and around the area to use if you want some outside resources to lead that conversation. And it is in direct response to resolutions passed by this assembly, by ASM, by the our academic and university colleagues saying that they want these sorts of conversations on campus this year. So this is going to be an ongoing conversation, and we are watching closely to see what the results are of all of these things. We're evaluating a number of them to see what their impact is and how we move forward. We are in the midst of a lot of challenges, but I don't want those challenges to let anyone lose sight of all the good things that happen here every day, things that, by and large, the media don't cover. Students walk into class and discover a lifetime path. Faculty whose 10-year research project pushes the boundary of knowledge in important areas. Work that we do across the state to bring knowledge and the resources of this university out to the citizens. A few weeks ago, I invited all the faculty who received the most prestigious national and international awards over to my house for a reception. These are people who received these awards over the last year. There were 73 faculty members on that list, and that was a really fun evening. Now, you know, imagine a newspaper story that says, 73 faculty celebrate national and international awards at the University of Wisconsin. Those are not stories that get written very often, but they're stories that we should all know about because these are our colleagues, and they're what makes us proud and happy to be here at this university. So I want to end where I started. Thank you for your dedication to the university. Thank you for all the things that you do here every day. Thank you for being here in the University Senate, and I look forward to a good conversation over this coming year.